How will you disrupt yourself?
On today's show.
So Campfire creates space for people to have these really open conversations, for people to support each other in the really, really challenging work that is leadership and management. When we were first starting in manager effectiveness space, we liked to talk about how bad managers are, how many bad managers there are. And there was a pivot at some point in the early days where we realized how unhelpful that was. Our language changed to, being a manager is hard.
Welcome back to the Disrupt Yourself podcast, where we provide strategies and advice on how to climb the S-curve of learning in your professional and personal life, stepping back from who you are to slingshot into who you want to be. I'm your host, Whitney Johnson, inviting you to sit with us around our virtual campfire. That's because today's episode talks about creating space for communication and human connection. My guest is Steve Arntz, who's been developing technology products and their marketing for more than 15 years. His current company, which he co-founded, is called Campfire. Campfire was on a mission to connect people. The tech was good and the team was right, but its true purpose had yet to be revealed. Steve shares how he found it, the people he leaned on along the way, and the huge S-curve jumps, including getting fired from his very first job, that led him here. Not surprisingly, Steve is a good storyteller, so I know you'll enjoy this conversation. Can you share with us a formative moment?
Yeah. So there was a Saturday, one morning, when I was probably 13, 14 years old. And it was probably 5:30 a.m. And my dad came into my bedroom and he ripped the covers off of me. You know, when you're 13, 14 and you get the covers ripped off of you, it's a pretty big shock. I got pretty angry and I thought, what is going on? And he pulled me out of bed and I'm like, Dad, what are you doing? He put me in the Aerostar van and we drove down to this concrete mixer place, and we picked up a concrete mixer, and we brought it back to the house, and we spent probably 13 hours in the backyard, me mixing cement, and him helping to guide my efforts there, and we spent the entire day building a retaining wall in the backyard, and all my friends are playing a summer Saturday, you know, and I'm mixing cement and building a rock wall. And further, he took what I thought were all the fun parts. He took the parts of crafting the wall and making the cool little formations and finding the exact rocks and pieces. And I was responsible for mixing cement, putting it into a wheelbarrow, taking it up to where he would make the rock wall. But at the end of this experience, we look at it and we see all of this dirt filled behind this rock wall. And then we planted strawberries and we had all of these strawberries and I got to eat these strawberries. And it was so formative for me because first off, eventually he let me start to do some of the more craftsman things. But at first he wanted me to just mix cement. It was formative for me because my dad taught me what a 13-hour day looks like. And helped me to know that I can do really, really hard things. And then finally, the opportunity to just taste those strawberries, which I know you know berries. You've sent me some of your jam. And these strawberries that you grow in your garden are not like the ones that you get at the store that are all juiced up and big and bulky. They're super sweet and they're small and they're delicious. And all of this helped me to just really sort of shape my life around work and the fruits of your labor and doing the hard things so that you can do the fun things at some point as well.
Mm, what a great story, Steve. And we both share a love for strawberries. Why did he rip the covers off of you? So I've got a hanging Chad there. What was that just for dramatic effect?
Yeah, I think that he had a plan for the day. I've actually learned this with my kids as well. If I ask them if they want to do a thing, or we kind of negotiate or talk about a thing, it feels like it'll never happen. It's like, I want to show them my favorite movie. What do? I just turn the movie on. And then I sit down, I start watching it, and they come sit next to me and we watch the movie. If he wants to get some work done in the yard, I think for him, it's just like, no, we just got to get to it. Rip the Band-Aid off. Because, like, I'm not going to sit here for 30 minutes and have you whine. I know exactly what I need to have happen, and we're just going to make it happen right now. So I think that's what it is for him. He also has fun with it, you know? I think in some instances, he'd actually get a cold spray bottle of water as well, rip the covers off, and just start spraying.
Have you ever done that to your children?
Spray no, water on them? No. Absolutely not.
But you rip the covers off. You know, there is something interesting about that. And it is a very big challenge, isn't it, as a parent, to know to what extent you kind of let them be and at what point does that move over into permissive as opposed to just, we're going to get this done. And I'm the parent and it's my job to teach you to work. We're going to go work.
Yeah. And not only that, but you'll end up liking it and thanking me for it. And that comes with, like, with food that we want our kids to try, you know, like mm-hmm. you sort of like, no, you just have to try it. And you just like, you get it into their mouth and then they're like, oh, wow. Yeah. I wouldn't have tried a new thing if it weren't for you. And I'm grateful that you're just so assertive here. Same with the work. Like I got to the end of that day and I just looked at the work that we had mm-hmm. done and thought, Dad, like, thank you. And yep. that's not how I felt when you ripped the covers off in the morning.
No. And 20 years later, when I asked you about a formative moment, you told this story.
Yeah.
All right. So 3 years ago, you were at Instructure. Tell us what you were doing for them and what you were trained to do.
I mean, I love the way you framed that, being trained to do something. It made me feel, as I was reflecting on it, like I was like a craftsman of sorts that had gone through an apprenticeship or something like that. That's what it felt like. I was on this team with these product people. I didn't feel at first like I belonged. I was working at my dream company. I had applied 3 times to get into Instructure and been rejected at different times over the course of 5 years. I'd seen them in Inc. magazine as one of the most innovative education technology companies in the world. And I just thought, like, one day I need to work there. And when I finally got there and was surrounded by all of these amazing, really craftspeople, these people who just really cared about their craft, I didn't feel at first like I belonged, but what I learned there was about how to build things that people would buy and love. That's what product is about. You need to build something that people will buy and love and use. And Instructure built products like that. And I was surrounded by people who could teach me those things. And while I was there, I had this wonderful sort of rotational experience to be able to learn product first. And then through another rip the covers off moment, to go back to that story, you know, one day someone took me into a room and said, we'd like you to consider leading product marketing. And so now I was going to go from product to marketing. And I said, I'm going to need the weekend to think about it. And they said, I'm sorry, I think we framed that wrong. No, you're doing this now. You're going to be in marketing. This isn't a choice. This is your new role starting Monday. And then from there, spent a lot of time my last year of Instructure. I think I went on 26 trips to 8 different countries and all over selling. And so I learned to sell. And so product, marketing, sales, those are the things that I was trained to do at a company that I felt had people who I'd really like, if you consider that apprenticeship model, like I really wanted to be an apprentice of, to really just learn from. That's Instructure.
What did you study in college, Steve?
I studied information systems. The way I landed on information systems is I went to a career fair at the business school, the university that I went to, and they put all of the majors in order of pay. And it was lowest pay on average to highest pay. I think they just thought it would be a fun thing to do. And, you know, general business went first and then marketing and then on through, and then information systems was last. And as I sat there and looked at all the majors, I thought, well, I love all of these. They're all fun. They all sound amazing. I'd love to learn any of them. So I might as well take the one that pays the most. Mm-hmm. And so I went and studied information systems.
You remind me of when I was working on Wall Street and first started as a secretary, and I'm working, you know, 8 hours, 9 hours a day. And I had that experience of, why would I make X when I can make 10X? If I'm going to go to work every day, why not make 10X? Yeah. And so that's a similar that you had. Okay, here are all the salaries. I'm going to work hard. How can I make 10X?
Yeah. Yeah. I wish it was 10X. It was probably like 1.15X. So you made the better decision.
So you're in your dream job and you've now done product and marketing and sales and you're very good at what you do. And then a private equity firm comes in, they buy Instructure and bump you go off the curve. Now, my longtime listeners will know that I have this hypothesis that when we get pushed off a curve, we are in this place where we were kind of ready to go do something new, but we weren't quite ready to go do something new. And so the universe gives us a little bit of a nudge. And I'm thinking in particular because of a Facebook post that you had with your now co-founder, Todd Erickson, that just prior to your being bumped off the curve, some conversations that you'd had. So tell us what happened. Tell us how you felt. Take us there.
Absolutely. So I'm going to take you even further back for just a second, because my first job out of college, I was fired from. This wasn't a private equity company coming in and saying, hey, here's a little bit of a parachute and we appreciate your contributions. This was a, you have failed at this job and we would like to invite you to leave. Oh. And so I'm sitting in the parking lot of my first job out of college, looking up at the window, just like on the TV shows, seeing like the people looking down from the second floor who are my friends, ashamed that they're looking at me. When I look up in tears, they look away and it's all of that. And I've got a box with all my things and I'm calling my wife and I failed you and I failed us and I'm a failure. And so I had some experience with getting bumped off of, you call it a curve. I kind of want to call it a cliff. And in this instance, I didn't really have a parachute, but it was a launch point for me. Without that experience of getting fired from that job, I wouldn't be sitting here. And we won't talk about all the experiences that came from that, but because I had that experience, I knew how to see when things might be coming. I knew how to prepare. I knew how to have conversations. You have in Smart Growth, explore and collect. And I had been doing exploring and I had been doing collecting. And some of that was in conversations with Todd, as you mentioned. We worked for 4 years together and we barely knew each other to this point. We were on the same team. But as product people, oftentimes you get in your lane, building your thing, your part of the product. And you don't actually collaborate nearly as much. And we didn't realize that until looking back, that just, we had spent 4 years sitting basically next to each other, not really interacting. And then I got moved into marketing. And once I was in marketing, I realized that Todd and I both loved to tell stories. And now I was responsible for telling the stories of the product that we were building together, which was called Bridge. And so in product marketing, you figure out how to share with customers those stories. Todd was a phenomenal storyteller with the things that he built. So he would tell stories with the products that he built. And so we connected very deeply, very quickly, as I was responsible for telling stories and he felt responsible for telling stories. And we built this shared relationship that wouldn't have been formed until I jumped into this marketing world that was new for me. As part of this, we built an event together. We did all sorts of things that led to us being both invited to a trip in London, where we were going to share the things that we were building with people in Europe. And so we're on a plane together to Europe and we spend a good solid week there together. And then on the flight back, my wife was so sick. And so she wanted the whole row to herself to just lie down and sleep. So I went and found a different seat on the plane and I sort of cuddled up with a book. It's The Manager. And it's a book Gallup has put out. And I started to read and I took pages and pages of notes. And finally, I just couldn't contain it anymore. And I texted Todd and I said, I don't know where you are on the plane, but you need to come sit next to me. We have some things we need to talk about. And I went through all of my notes with him and shared this vision that I started to form in my brain of a world that could be different, where people could lead better. And a lot of that was work that we thought we might be able to do it in structure, but we had a sense that it might be work that we would do together. We both felt like we wanted to start a company by ourselves. We didn't want to work together. He wanted to build a company. I wanted to build a company. And somehow, as you say, with sort of being shoved off the cliff because of the private equity firm and their agenda, they came and said, hey, both of you need to leave. and here's some money. It's going to be okay. And what we really think you should do is think through the type of thing that you should go and create in the world. And it hadn't really occurred to us that much that it might be together. But as we started to create this shared vision on a whiteboard of the things that mattered the most to us, we ended up with this just simple Venn diagram where Todd was very, very interested in this concept of human connection. And I was very interested in this concept of growth. And we had built this Venn diagram that showed the intersection of those two things and said, we want to work here together. And let's find a way to work here at this intersection together for as long as we can. And that was the start of it.
Did the private equity firm actually suggest that the two of you go build something together?
So, I mean, a private equity firm doesn't have a personality but we never had conversations with anyone in the private equity firm.
Okay.
The private equity firm suggested, the time for big innovation and hyper-growth R&D stuff, that's over. So they instructed the people at Instructure, to find the people involved in those sorts of things and invite them as kindly as possible to find something new to do. But the people who cared about Todd and I, who knew Todd and I, knew our strengths, those people did suggest that it might be an opportunity for us to go. And
for everyone who's listening, an observation I'll make is that from a company perspective, what I'm hearing you say is that the private equity firm, the PE firm, was saying the time for exploration and collection is now over. We now want to be in accelerator phase, and that means we're not going to be focusing on innovating. We're just focusing on scaling. So that's interesting. All right. So you got your little nudge, and then you started building a company. So tell us what Campfire does. Tell us what you're building.
What we started to build was a company that helped support people in corporate book clubs. Mm-hmm. So we found a leader at a company called Weave. Her name's Courtney. And Courtney Osborne, she wanted to help her marketing team to be able to weather the storm that was the beginning of the pandemic. She thought, this will be 3 or 4 months and we need to get through it. We need to think through some creative solutions and ideas and things. And I've got some ideas about some books we can read together. Can you help us get through that experience? And at the time, I really do think she was thinking to herself, this will last the summer and then we'll be back to normal.
Yeah.
And here we are 2 years later.
Right.
And she had this insight about the way her people needed to connect and grow. And that was that intersection of that Venn diagram. And so we built some tools to help her team to connect around a couple of specific books and to learn and to grow together. And that ended up leading to 20 companies using the different tools and things that we built to help them connect and grow through book club experiences. Well, we got to about November of that year, and the economics of the business were not good. And we thought that if we could just pour gas on it a little bit, make it easier for people to buy the things that we were selling, that it might work. But we talked to 25 leaders, and all 25 of them told us we weren't ready to grow. And so we asked 65 other leaders who were HR leaders what the best use of the things that we had built would be. Because that was a community that we had connection with. We had a large audience of HR leaders we could talk to. And we asked them, what is the book club tool best solved for? And 85% of them told us that manager training is what they would use it for if they had their way. And so we pivoted into manager training using the exact same mechanics. Let's grab a book. Let's talk about the concepts in a book. Let's do it more deliberately, intentionally. Let's spread out the time at which we do it. And we can have some really great and robust manager training, kind of purpose-built for the pandemic. So
yeah. Ooh. I know you didn't just make that up now. I love that. Purpose-built for the pandemic. Okay, so a few observations. One is, research that was put out by Amar Bide said that 70% of all successful new businesses end up in a place different from where they started. And you, so far, are successful, gaining traction, and you are in a different place than you started. The other thing that's coming to mind for me is the jobs to be done theory, where you're looking at the functional and emotional jobs that need to be done. And you were saying, okay, we're doing this job. What functional job would you actually use it for as opposed to what job we think you should use it for. And the idea for everybody who's listening is the importance of doing that market research. I mean, think about what he just said. He interviewed 25 people. He interviewed another 65 people to get the information that he needed to know where the business needed to go. And so now tell us about where you are today and what's happening with your business.
So at a high level, the two most important words for us at Campfire are create space. So Campfire creates space for people to have these really open conversations, for people to support each other in the really, really challenging work that is leadership and management. When we were first starting in manager effectiveness space, we liked to talk about how bad managers are, how many bad managers there are. And there was a pivot at some point in the early days where we realized how unhelpful that was. Our language changed to being a manager is hard, and so much away from managers just aren't very good. And when we reframed it, Campfire became so much more that support group it needed to be, so much less that instructional tool of we're going to teach you how to be good. And instead, we'll give you a place and a space to support you in the things that are just really hard.
Do you remember what led to that aha? Because that was a big insight. Or was it more gradual?
I think it's that experience in product marketing, that framing that I was able to draw from a previous experience around, mm-hmm. you know, Donald Miller, someone I know mm-hmm. you know and have had mm-hmm. on your podcast. And mm-hmm. he talks about making your customer, your buyer, the hero. And I think saying that... managers are bad.
You're a terrible manager. That's
makes
not a great
Campfire
way to
the
say.
Hero. We're gonna come help you because we know better than you.
Right.
Whereas right. Donald would say, "Hey, like, help these people realize that they're the hero, mm-hmm. and you can just be a guide." So management is hard. We can give you a cape. We can give you superpowers, and we'll be a guide in this thing that is hard. And you can be the manager you need to be. You can do it. And so I think a lot of it was story brand, was thinking through Donald and his concepts and ideas, because Todd, that was a formative book for him on my team. So story brand is just the foundation for him of building things that people will love and use.
All right. Shout out to Donald Miller and story brand. It is great stuff. So I know we're talking about managers, so we're kind of toggling back and forth between managers and entrepreneurs. And I want to focus more on your journey right now is... As entrepreneurs are thinking about successfully navigating the launch point of a new S-curve of starting a business, what are one or two things that you would say to them? Here's what you need to do.
So I'm going to use your words from launch point, though I'm going to repurpose one of them. So hopefully
okay.
that's
please
okay.
Please do. Yeah.
Explore and collect, right? So explore, I'm not going to repurpose much. I think it's exactly what I want to talk about. I've read a few key books here. Number one, Designing Your Life by Bill Burnett and Dave Evans. Another book by Clayton Christensen, How Will You Measure Your Life? And then Smart Growth. So let's talk about Designing Your Life. So in that book, they ask you to ask yourself two key questions. Why work and why life? And in the why work question, the way I like to frame it with people is imagine I gave you a $150,000 a year annuity. It was just guaranteed, adjusted for inflation. It's going to be great. You've got the money that you need. Why are you still showing up every day to work? And I usually ask people to spend like 4 hours on it because I think it really is pretty some deep, introspective, meaningful work to figure out like what is the purpose of work for you? What are you trying to do with it? And then on the why life side, we have a choice to show up every day. And why do we make that choice? Why do we exist? There was a leader at Instructure who was a sales leader, and he would ask that question of every new salesperson who came onto the team. Why do you exist? And I
wow.
think that in Bill Burnett and Dave Evans's book, they call it why life. But I think whatever way you need to get to that, I think entrepreneurs really need to understand. And In your book, Smart Growth, around Explore, it's finding that the purpose, that value, those values, those key components. Clayton Christensen says, like, when you look back on your life, how are you going to measure its success? His TED Talk on this, his book on this, so powerful, so impactful. I think that's adds another layer to it. And then when I think about your seven steps and the explorer part of your book, Smart Growth, you bring those things together and you understand that why. Like, that is so essential, because that is the fuel that you draw from as an entrepreneur, because it gets hard and you have to have that fuel.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you're bringing that up and really reinforcing that is the importance of doing the inner work. And I'm thinking about how just this morning someone asked me, okay, when you're writing a book, how do you sustain your motivation? And I, you know, I had a number of answers. You know, you have a deadline. Deadlines are useful. But the foundational piece of it was, why are you writing the book? Which goes back to what you said. And that advice that you're giving to any entrepreneur and actually anybody in a job is like, why are you doing this job? And I love the taking it a step further of, why do you exist? What is your raison d'etre? That's so good. Any thoughts on the importance of coaching around this? I know you've had a coach as you've started on this journey. Any thoughts on how that's been helpful for you?
So that's the collect part that I was going to talk about. And okay. I'm going to repurpose this just a tiny bit.
Yeah, please.
The collector phase at the launch point of entrepreneurship, you need to collect the key relationships. You need to find the people who are going to be your support system. So when I was thinking about this, I needed to think, how does my family feel about going on this journey? They need to feel like they are building Campfire too, because there will be such immense sacrifice from them in supporting me, in supporting themselves, in finding space for themselves, in living their life, sometimes without me there because of how long and hard it can get. Next, who are the friends I can depend and lean on? It's not a big group. It's not all your LinkedIn people. It's like two or three or one person who you know will be there as the friend to lean on. Where will I go with some of my hardest challenges? Am I going to burden always my wife with every hard thing that I'm dealing with? Or should I get a coach? And I realized that I had a need to get a coach, and Nathan Tanner became that for me and has been that for me for more than 18 months now. And he has become that person who I can just consistently go to. Quick text, we call them burn emails. Sometimes I need to write a burn email where it's just like, listen, I'm going to vent and I just want you, and I make the subject burn email. And sometimes he reads it, sometimes he doesn't, deletes it, but we don't talk about it unless I bring it up again. But it allows me to have this safe space to get the heat of the moment feelings that I have about a thing off my chest. But there's just so much that these people that you collect, if you will, ahead of this launch point, that they do for you to be able to support you in the challenging things that you're doing.
I love too that you talked about your family and the importance of bringing them on this journey with you and collecting their support, collecting the support of friends, of your partners like a Todd, for example, and then also then having a coach to do that. So Steve, you talk about collecting the relationships that you need as you move up that S curve. Is that something that you were aware of at the outset, or is that something you figured out
that
later?
Is such a good question. Like a really, really good question. I think I supported that with my wife and violated it with almost everyone else. So my wife and I were extremely intentional about going into this together. I'd received advice from an entrepreneur named Michael Proper that when I'm ready to start a business, that I need to kneel at the foot of my stairs. I was at his house and we were at the foot of his stairs. And I need to say a prayer to God with my wife and be very intentional about essentially asking, is this the thing that we should do together? And are we doing this together? And by together, we mean in that case, me, my wife, and God. And so that, very intentional. With my children, there was no, hey, you want to do this thing with us? And there should have been. There should have been. That would have been incredible. And then with my friends, there was no boundary setting. There was no sort of, hey, can you help me in this way throughout this journey? And how powerful that would have been. Because I violated boundaries and friendships and relationships all along the way unknowingly. and had to come back and sort of fix and reset and change those relationships to what would work for them and for me. And so I just, that question is so powerful. It's an edit. It's a in post, you know, like this is how I did it. I collected all these relationships. And so.
All right. So you did decide to take outside funding to raise a round. Can you just talk through briefly how you made that decision? Because there's a whole calculus that goes there. So just talk through some of your thought process around that.
Part of the problem with this decision was that in the early days, we thought it was a philosophical decision. We thought a couple of things. You either liked venture capitalists or you didn't. And you either believed in raising money or you didn't. Almost as like a dogmatic thing, just a principled moral thing, a stance you took as an entrepreneur, you know. No, I'm a bootstrapper. And it became an identity thing, right? It was all very damaging. Now what I think about is there are businesses that have the possibility of high growth, that have a really high ceiling. We call those rockets sometimes. We talk about getting on a rocket ship. Are you ready to, you know, my startup is a rocket ship. It has utility. If you think about like, is this a rocket ship or is it a Honda Civic? Both of them need fuel. If you put rocket fuel in a Honda Civic, it's going to explode. It'll just blow up. People get hurt. You put rocket fuel in a rocket ship and you can go to the moon or to Mars or wherever. And so you need to think about, and we didn't do the thoughtful work in the beginning because we were just so, we don't like venture capitalists. We don't like venture capital. It hurts the world. And philosophically, we're opposed to raising money. Instead of thinking, what kind of business do we have? Do we want to build? What kind of fuel does it need? And so there was a moment, and it was actually at the WeWork across the freeway from me right now, where we sat in a room with a whiteboard and Todd got up and there was a quiet pause, and I probably remember it different than everybody else, but he got up with the marker and he painted a vision for us where the facilitated experiences that we were making might not one day need a facilitator. He painted a world where everyone could have access to small group discussions at any moment that they might need them, because we could figure out through technology how to remove the need for a human facilitator. And at that point, in that moment, in that room, everyone knew it was time to go get some rocket fuel, because there was a rocket here, because we were all inspired by the idea of universal access to a thing, which is, I think, the definition of a rocket. Are you building something that's designed to give, at its best, universal access to a thing?
So good. So your product, your marketing and sales background is coming in very handy and telling these amazing stories, Steve. Okay, so let's talk about the sweet spot. Now, I would argue, you might disagree, that you're not in the sweet spot of your business yet, still kind of on the launch point moving into the sweet spot, but you no doubt have sweet spot days. And so can you tell us about a day in the last few months where you just said to yourself, "Ah, this is exhilarating. This is exactly where we're supposed to be."
It's such a fun question. We recently added someone to our team. Her name's Megan. And so Megan joined our team about a month ago. And she flew out the first week of February to where our team is here in Utah. She's in Kansas. She flew out and we spent a week together. And the week was exhilarating. And there were moments of just feeling really strongly connected as a team and able to do the work that we wanted to do. But it really culminated when we went to our favorite Thai restaurant as a team, Sabai Di here. And it's a little hole in the wall. And we got a table for six, because there's six of us at this point now, three women, three men, sitting at this table, eating Thai food together. And we had the people who needed to be there. We knew that the team that we needed to build this was there at that table. We asked each other very campfire type questions that kind of match our product, with sort of a hope to get some vulnerable answers. This was to end a long meal. So we'd spent 2 hours together. And now we're asking just a couple questions. And Megan asked Taylor, "What is the proudest moment of your career?" And I sat there for what felt like the longest, probably 9 seconds of my life waiting for his response, because I really wanted him to say this moment right here, right now. And he did. He said, the proudest moment of my career is sitting right here at this table with these six people, because I know that this is the team that's going to take us to the next phase of growth, that we are with the people we need to be with. And I just got emotional right there at the table, just feeling, I mean, that was the sweetest spot I'd ever been in my career, because it was a culmination of every other good spot and bad spot, and every spot that ever happened in my career was right there in that moment in its like most perfect state with people that I knew I wanted to build something amazing with.
All right, let's talk about mastery. So one of the hardest things to do is to jump to a new curve, especially when you have an old S curve that you're ready to jump from, but is very comfortable. It's sometimes described as giving away your Legos. Is there anything that you have found yourself knowing you need to delegate, but you're just so good at it, it's hard to do?
My Legos, surprisingly, have become storytelling and product marketing. Like, that's the place that I just have the most fun. And for almost 10 years, I was a product person. That was my identity. Not only that, but I thought it was the only true job on the planet. Like, anyone not doing product is not doing, they work. Haven't found their calling, or, you mm-hmm. know, because mm-hmm. if they did, it would be product. It's a very kind of an arrogant view of the world that I had as a product person. And then getting the covers ripped off, thrown into marketing. And now I find this rich world of storytelling and listening. And storytelling are the two key skills for a product marketer in my mind. And so I loved those two things. And then I come to Campfire, and we have Marin on the team, and she's phenomenal at brand, and she's a marketer. And the last bit of sort of Legos that I gave to Marin were the product marketing Legos of telling our story, building a beautiful website, the product marketing work that needed to be done. And in November this last year, we started to launch into that. And because I love it so much, I stayed very, very tightly involved with it. And then in the middle of December, I got nervous that we weren't going to hit our date for our launch. And we weren't going to be able to do all of the messaging work, the storytelling work, the website design, all of the work that we needed to do. I was worried we wouldn't be able to do it. And so I actually called Marin. It's probably 7 o'clock on a Thursday night. And I said, Marin, I'm feeling like we're not going to be able to make this. And she said to me, I'm feeling the same thing. And the thing that we need the most is for you to get out of the way. We need you to not be involved in this anymore. Because I believe that I can hit the date. I believe that we will hit the date if you step aside and allow us to use your analogy, play with the Legos. And I know you love these Legos, but you need to give them to us and trust us. You've done the work to set the stage, to provide the vision, and now it's time for us to go get the work done.
How did that feel?
I hope this doesn't sound contrived, but it was exhilarating. It was, first off, I'd worked with this woman for so long and sort of hoped for a moment like this for a long, long time of like, let me go. I got this. So that was exciting. It was also exciting to realize I wasn't needed. It was exciting to realize that there were other things I could go and do if I gave up this piece. It was also exciting to realize I'm not good at hitting dates. I am not good at, you know, you look at StrengthsFinder and there's an execution theme. My first execution theme item is number 11 on my list of 34. I'm influence and strategic thinking. Like, those are my two. They fill the entire first 10. And then there's one execution. And Marin has like six of her top 10 in executing. And so there was this moment of just realization of like, she will hit the date. She's going to do it. And while I don't get to play with the Legos, that's not what's important. What's important is that we give space for the right result to occur. And so she said, on Thursday, we're going to have our meeting with the design, with the agency, with the design team, you won't be there. And when you're not there, people will wonder, why is Steve not here? And I'll explain to them that from here, Steve's not going to be involved. Then I'm going to help us hit the date, February 15th. We had decided that day that February 15th was the date. We're going to hit the date and Steve will be involved if he needs to, but I'll work with Steve on anything we need. And it's this team that's going to get us there.
You've mentioned Marin, Megan, Taylor, Todd. There's you. Who's the sixth person? There were six people at that dinner. Sarah. Okay.
Yeah.
So Michael Lewis has talked about no stats all-stars, the people on the court that help you play better, but you don't know exactly what they do. Are there any people like that that you would like to give a shout out to?
Yeah. And I love that you say you don't know exactly what they do, because I know some of what happens and I know a lot of things I don't know what happens. And when I say that, I mean at home with my wife and my children. So my wife, Rebecca, is the first person that comes to mind. And I recently had a former CEO. He's a coach now. He told me that his firm belief is that she carries the load more than anyone else, even on my team, any of the co-founders I have. He said, my firm belief is that Rebecca is carrying more of the load than any of your co-founders. Mm. And that hit me with such force. It was just a week ago that he shared that with me. And I asked her how she felt about that. And she said that it deeply resonated. That there's just so much that she carries in this journey that is entrepreneurship. My children. So I recently interviewed an intern for Campfire. And his dad is the CEO of a $3.5 billion company that started around the time he was born. Mm. And now is this big company. And I said, I need to thank you. And he said, what for? And I said, for your sacrifice for building this company. It's Pluralsight. You built Pluralsight. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, there were days your dad wasn't there. A lot of them. There were days that your dad was in tears over big, hard decisions he had to make. And his emotional energy was in the company. There were days that your family sacrificed immensely, that you sacrificed immensely to build Pluralsight. I know this because I have children who are going through the same thing right now. And I imagine myself in a world one day. I just hope to be in a world one day where I am 20 years in and we've all sacrificed together. And so my kids are these no stats all-stars. And I don't think anybody really realizes, because this kid looking across from me, I call him a kid, he's in college. He said, no one has ever said anything like that to me. So I know that our children are no stats all-stars. My coach is another one, my lead investor. I think investors get a bad rap. Mitch Rencher is the best kind of investor. I've sat at his house until 2 a.m., we're 4.5 hours in and we're trying to decide whether we're going to keep the conversation going till morning, because we're just leaning in to the relationship, to the problems we're trying to solve together. And so Mitch is another one.
So one of our foundational ideas, or next story, I should say, around the campfire is that the fundamental unit of growth in any organization is the individual. You grow yourself to grow your people, to grow your company. Can you talk about one area where you focused on growing, and as you grew, that made it possible for someone on your team to grow, and then you saw, because someone on your team grew, Campfire grew?
Yeah. And it starts with someone on my team sharing an idea with me. And this is where Sarah comes in. And she introduced me to this really powerful idea that I had encountered in different ways from different people. Brené Brown is one of those people. This idea that you shouldn't rely on validation from others for your strength, for your sense of purpose, for your sense of value, that when you do that, you can lose grounding. And she told me in some pretty strong language that I needed to find a different center, that I needed to be able to rely on just myself or another source of value to just really feel that sense of self-worth and identity. That Campfire couldn't be that for me, that the people in Campfire could not be that for me, that it would be really damaging for me if I continued to rely on others for that sense of purpose and identity and self-worth. And I left work that day a different person. I went home and engaged with my family in a way that I hadn't for 2 years at least. And then the way that I engaged with my team became much more intentional, much less focused on them liking me, and much more focused on what is right and good and what do we need to do. And where that had the big impact on the team, I think the biggest impact was in my relationship with Todd. So to that point, we'd spent a solid 18, 20 months together and still had challenges in our relationship and how we worked together. We were both product people. We both wanted to have a vision for where things would go and how we would build things. And as soon as I was able to let go of that, of those feelings, I was able to lean into the things that I think Todd had been trying to tell me for 18 months. But maybe I was a little too insecure to be able to receive as feedback, because I was so worried about what Todd's feedback meant about whether he liked me or not as a person. And it blinded me from the ability to see the feedback for what it was, just a focus on trying to make the best thing we possibly could make. And it had nothing to do with me. There was nothing personal about any of it. And when I was able to do that, Todd was able to launch into a new curve himself of really being able to be the independent product and experience leader of our business, to where he felt autonomy to be able to go and do the things he needed to do, because he knew that they wouldn't bug me or hurt me or offend me or any of those sorts of things. He could just freely move throughout the business because I had this new sense of security that I think I had learned.
That's really powerful about how when we feel secure in our role, then we give people, as you said earlier, you create space for people to be secure and go and build in their roles. How did you respond to Sarah when she gave you that feedback? What did that look like?
It was very direct. It was very intentional. And I said, you are right. And I said, thank you. And as we walked out of the building, it was this Kiln building that I'm in right now. I said, this is gonna change things for me. I think there were some key components of that. First, she told me that it was like the biggest problem that I had in my life. The second thing is she told me that if I didn't solve it, that everything I cared about would ultimately not be successful, at least not in the way that I wanted it to be. So Campfire wouldn't be successful. I couldn't be successful with my family. None of the important things in my life could be successful if I didn't solve this one thing. And so those two things, we had come, it was on the heels of a couple of hours of conversation as well. And there was a lot of sincerity and intentionality in the conversation, and it made it a very safe space to share some very challenging feedback. And I'm not always this way, but I was grateful for and receiving of the feedback. And that's why, you know, I went home.
Wow.
And things were different.
Yeah. I mean, kudos to you, and also kudos to her for having the courage, but also because she works for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean,
and she's a week in at this point.
Right. I mean, she works for you. She's a week in, and also the sense of self that she had, and I think invested in you, right? Because you don't deliver that kind of feedback to someone if you're not really invested in them. Otherwise, you just don't care enough to do it.
Right.
So, wow, it's really powerful. Where can people find you if they want to work with Campfire? What's the best way to be able to engage?
There's probably three ways. There's two Steve Arntzes on LinkedIn. I'm one of them. You'll find me pretty quick. Getcampfire.com is our website. And then Campfire on LinkedIn. There's like 67 Campfires on LinkedIn. So you probably want to look for me or our website and navigate over to LinkedIn. But those are probably the three best places to find us.
Question for you as we wrap up, as we've been sitting around the campfire, as we've been creating space for your wonderful storytelling, what are some connections or ideas that you have had, that you've made? It may be something I said, it may be something you said, it's more likely some idea or thought that occurred to you. What was that?
So as we've talked through all these stories, I'm just so grateful for the number of people in my life who've had such a tremendous impact on me. I think about my dad ripping off the covers. I think about the way that Todd showed up and partnered with me, even though he could go lead and do and build his own thing. I think about you, Whitney, and the moments that we've had. I think about my family. I think about everyone on my team, about that moment at the Thai restaurant. I think about the fact that there are just so many people that I've been fortunate enough to bump into in different ways, and we've only talked about a fraction of them. And I think about the fact that when I started out on entrepreneurship, it was so much about me. As much as I wanted to think it was, no, I'm going to create something for other people in the world, you don't realize how little that's true until you start to bump up against all of the different the people, and you build those relationships, and you start to realize more and more and more that no matter how much you're giving and abundant and eager to work with other people, there's still more that you can do and that you can learn from others. So,
Any final thoughts?
I am just so grateful for the opportunity that you've given to reflect on what has been the most meaningful 2 years of growth and connection. To go back to that Venn diagram, I cannot imagine 2 years more filled with those two things, growth and connection. And I appreciate the opportunity to connect with you, to learn from you, to grow, and to reflect on all of that.
Steve, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I have so many takeaways, but here are four. Number one, the business you've built probably has a different purpose. You know the tools you've built are good. They have value. You're onto something, but it's just not clicking with the world. This might be the time to ask, maybe this company or project is meant for something else. Steve surveyed HR pros and executives, and they told him that his book club tool was better suited for management training. And out of that market research, the true business was born. These pivots can be scary, but as we discussed in the interview, 70% of businesses make them before finding success. Number two, reframe your customer relationship. This is tied to the first takeaway. The purpose of Steve and Todd's company was to help managers. But when the storytelling was about fixing bad managers, nobody wanted it. It was true, but it was a negative framing. They had to make their prospective clients the heroes of the story. Managers aren't bad. Management is just very hard, and we are here to help. Number three, you need to get out of the way. I loved hearing about Steve's team taking ownership of their work. Sometimes that means telling a leader, "We've got this." Sometimes a leader's active involvement is a hindrance to the mission. Great leadership is about recognizing when you need to move off of someone else's S-curve. You can't do everything, and you can't be good at everything. Rather than taking offense, Steve felt this was a moment of relief, empowerment, immense pride. Number four, remember the No Stat All-Stars are everywhere. In your collecting phase along the curve, you are building an ecosystem of resources, tools, and most importantly, people. But the most important ones are not always colleagues and bosses. They're your family and friends too. And as Steve said so brilliantly, they make immense sacrifices for entrepreneurship too. We must be able to lean on these people, but at times it can be too much. That's where a coach can be so valuable. If you want to do more on storytelling, listen to Donald Miller, episode 95, or Dan Rome, episode 249. And for more on how to give feedback, listen to our episode with Kim Scott and Trier Bryant, episode 260. Thank you again to Steve Arntz for joining us. Thank you for listening. Thank you to our producer, Matt Silverman, audio engineer and editor, Whitney Jobe, and production assistant, Stephanie Brummel. I'm Whitney Johnson, and this is Disrupt Yourself. Disrupt.